mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, remembering those who gave us the freedom to celebrate on the 4th of July, and one family's dedication to helping veterans at a special retreat in scenic southern Ohio. Also this morning, conflicts among coworkers are inevitable and sometimes do require drastic action, but is there a way to avoid conflict in the workplace to begin with, or resolve it before things get out of hand? We'll have some advice. And from Why on the Fly events for kids to the Battle of the Businesses, we have details on summer events from the Findlay YMCA. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024. So, if you are looking for something to do this weekend after the 4th of July and go and check out all the fireworks and, hey, that's great, then now what? More than 6,000 of the nation's best sword-wielding athletes are in Columbus this week. In the Ohio State Capitol, the Greater Columbus Convention Center is hosting the USA Fencing Summer Nationals. It is going on through this coming Monday. The fencers who finish strong in Columbus will be in line to move on to the World Championships, which is one more step on the path toward the 2028 Summer Olympics, or not even to the 2024 Summer Olympics, already starting to look ahead to 2028. And it says here, spectators can watch the competitions in person this week for free. So you don't even have to buy a ticket. So the USA Fencing Summer Nationals going on this week in Ohio. All right. If you're looking for something to do, there you go. Speaking of things going on in the state capitol, lawmakers are angling to make the walleye Ohio's official state fish. Now, this has been on the agenda for some lawmakers for quite some time, wanting to make the walleye Ohio's official state fish. And now they are one step closer to making that happen. Last week, the Ohio House passed a measure to designate the native freshwater species as a representative for the Buckeye State. And I did not know this. Apparently, Ohio is one of only three states that don't already have a designated fish. So we're a little bit late to the party here with the designated fish. So we definitely need a state fish. And, I mean, why not the walleye? I mean, it does kind of make sense. Walleye are found in Lake Erie and all of its tributaries, also in the Ohio River. The state Senate will need to pass a measure supporting the state fish selection before it can be made official. So this is still in limbo, but we are one step closer to finally naming a state fish for Ohio. So there is good news. I know this was something that was on everybody's mind. So just to let you know, we are one step closer to naming our state fish. That must have been among the myriad of votes that the State House took last week before their summer recess. So thank goodness they got that in. I mean, yeah. This is really sad news on a serious note. I don't know if you heard the story. Two teenage siblings have been identified as victims killed in a weekend house fire in Fulton County. Crews were called to a home on North Fayette Street around 9 a.m. on Saturday, found three people trapped inside a residence. 16-year-old boy survived injuries suffered in the fire, while his brother and sister, 19-year-old Tyler Tussing and 18-year-old Katie Tussing, sadly did not. The cause of the blaze has not yet been determined, but investigators say they have learned that the fire began on the first floor of the home and that the home had no smoke detectors. Just a tragic reminder, another tragic reminder, to make sure that you have smoke detectors in your home and that they are functional. It's not enough just to have the smoke detector. They have to be functional. And so if you haven't tested yours in a while, let this be your motivation to do that today. And if they are not functioning, replace those batteries or replace the detectors themselves, because this is what tragically can happen. And certainly thoughts and prayers with the family. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. 4th of July holiday, what are you going to be doing? Cooking out? Most of us will be doing that at some point over the next several days. A new survey of 2,000 Americans finds that 53% believe that women do not get enough credit for their grilling skills. 55% of men believe that grilling is still a male-dominated activity. Jody Hallman of Purdue, the chicken people, says, we know that meals bring people together, and we believe grilling is an equal opportunity activity that all members of the household can and should enjoy. So let's hear it for all of the women grill masters out there. Let's not forget the ladies. More than half of Americans agree that burgers, dogs, and steaks are must-haves on the grill. 27% believe fish deserve more attention on the grill. Grilled fish. Nice thing about grilled fish, it doesn't take very long. Don't want to grill that fish too long. 16% say chicken is the sort of unsung hero of the grill. Again, keeping in mind the survey was commissioned by Purdue, the chicken people. 63% of respondents say grilled food is some of their favorite food to eat, especially this time of year. So, but you know, let's hear it for all of the women at the grill. My wife does pretty much all of the grilling in our house. I mean, she's better at it than I am. She's better at all kinds of cooking than I am. So I just leave it to her. She enjoys doing it. So who am I to argue? Let's see. a lot of people traveling over the next several days for the 4th of July holiday. And in Crawford County, Missouri, cops recently encountered what can best be described as a flying saucer on wheels. So I guess it's not a flying saucer if it's on wheels, but you get the idea. Looked like a flying saucer on wheels on a stretch of the interstate there in Crawford County, Missouri. When deputies approached the humanoids on their way down the highway, it says when deputies approached the vehicle to see who or what was inside, the close encounter revealed friendly humanoids who were on their way to a UFO festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Of course they were. I bring this up because, I mean, this is a story that is much better told with visuals. So, you know, on the radio, I can't really do it justice, but it really did look like a UFO on wheels. If you have not seen this, look up the story about the UFO on the highway in Missouri, and you'll see the picture. It is a crazy vehicle, but apparently they gave it a good look over and determined that it was street legal. They warned the driver of the state's strict enforcement of warp speed on the interstate and told the driver to keep his phasers on stun, and then the extraterrestrial vehicle was sent on its way. UFO festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Oh, man, if you're a law enforcement officer, you see all kinds of things, especially this time of year, but that is a bit unusual. And can you imagine just tootling down the interstate in your SUV and suddenly your corner of your eye passing you on the in the other lane is a UFO on wheels? Okay. Actually, it looked a little bit like a Cybertruck, you know, and there's Tesla Cybertrucks, actually. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day ahead of the big holiday that will cut this week short, chances are you might be rushing to get things done at work. But don't forget to listen to science and take a break every now and then. Elissa Epel is a psychiatry department professor at the University of California at San Francisco School of Medicine. She says, downtime is important for our health and our body, but also our minds. This can come in the form of a long walk or even just a pause before entering the conference room for a meeting. Robert Poynton, who literally wrote the book on this topic, his book is called Do Pause. You Are Not a To-Do List. Mr. Poynton is an associate fellow at the Oxford University School in England, explained that we need to give our brains a break from time to time. We feel that we need to be getting on with things. However, if we're always getting on with things, we haven't taken any time to decide or examine whether what we're getting on with is the best thing for us. If it's the most interesting, important, fruitful, delightful, pleasurable, or healthy thing. He said, during the pandemic, when millions of workers were toiling away remotely, Microsoft amassed a trove of data on the subject of human productivity. And what they found was that workers who took part in a study mandated 10-minute breaks between tasks were ultimately more focused and more engaged and less stressed than those who slogged through back-to-back meetings and projects and all of that. In short, breaks between meetings, breaks between tasks, allow the brain to reset, reducing a cumulative buildup of stress across all of those meetings and tasks and all of the other things that you have to do at work. Long and short of it is, take a break every now and then. I know that with the holiday, you've got a bit of a crunch trying to get everything done before knocking off for a couple of days, but it is still okay to take a breather every now and then. So good advice as we head into the middle part of this holiday shortened week. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. There was a deadly shooting involving Dayton police officers over the weekend. Dayton Police Chief Kamran Afzal describes the circumstances.
He shot in response to the individual's action, which is very preliminary right now. We know, because we're not going to do the criminal investigation, is the individual pointed the weapon towards the officers. So we're not waiting at that point for that person to discharge a firearm when they're pointing a weapon towards the officers.
In Cincinnati, two Jewish cemeteries were vandalized, leaving 176 gravestones damaged. City officials are calling it an act of violence and desecration. Incidents of anti-Semitism have more than doubled nationwide since the start of the Israel-Hamas war last fall. The Anti-Defamation League reports 11 incidents so far this year in Ohio. The U.S. Supreme Court ended its term Monday with a landmark decision on presidential immunity. CBS News reporter Nydia Cavazos has the story.
In a 6-3 opinion, the Supreme Court ruled the former presidents have absolute immunity from prosecution for official acts related to their core constitutional powers. But the court said there is no immunity for unofficial acts and gave some guidance on how lower courts can draw that line. The case now goes back to the lower court, which will have to look at what acts are official and what are unofficial.
For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Of course, coming up on the 4th of July, it is entirely appropriate that we remember those who give us the freedom to celebrate on the 4th. And there is a tremendous Findlay connection to service to our country throughout the years. Rob Tong is with us in the studio this morning. He is the curator of the Love Findlay History Facebook page, or Facebook group, as many people know. We got like 8,000 followers on that page.
Yeah, in the last almost 3 years, there's like 8,300 people on it. So, and it's not just Findlay, it's all of Hancock County. Sure. But this community has some really, really cool history. Some good, some bad, but we don't want to forget about it. We want to learn from the bad things.
And especially as it relates to those who have served, there are some incredible stories.
Well, I mean, you figure Hancock County, really some of the very first Congressional Medal recipients in American history. Mm-hmm. Two are buried in Macomb. I mean, you've got Jacob Parrott down in Kenton.
Right.
And that's a huge, huge honor. And then this week, two more of the Andrews Raiders finally, after all these years, received the Medal of Honor. And a friend from down south was instrumental in making that happen.
Yeah.
But just an amazing history.
Yeah.
Today being the second day of Gettysburg also. I mean, Hancock County had several people killed at that battle with the 82nd Ohio at Gettysburg, too, which is cool. So,
and I know you are very much a historian of that time. You've done a lot of research into the Northwest Ohio contingent that fought in the American Civil War. And we think of the Civil War as, you know, along the Mason-Dixon line, you know, and just in that area. But, you know, we were very much involved here. And even more recently, there are, you know, obviously are stories right up to modern day conflicts.
Yeah. And it's not just, I mean, military is huge, huge, but Hancock County, it was the natural gas, it was the glass, it was the automobiles. I'll have a Grant automobile at the parade Thursday that was made in Findlay in 1914.
Yeah.
So we'll be pulling in the parade for that. So hopefully the weather will be great, but really a wonderful history here.
And so if you don't follow the Love Findlay History Facebook page, do check that out, because it is really fascinating, all of the history, and especially as it connects to military service. And I know one of the things that you are really pushing right now or publicizing, making sure people are aware of, is the Josh Minton Foundation with a tie-in to the local community.
Yeah, and not only do we promote the history, but it's not always about old things that we should remember. It's sometimes creating good history for the future.
Yeah.
And the military is everything. We raised a lot of money last year for a memorial that just got put up in Benton Ridge honoring a World War II bomber crash.
Yeah.
But I'm with a really good friend of mine, Bob Minton, today. And he's going to tell you a little story real quick.
Bob, talk a little bit, and I know we've talked with you before about the Josh Minton Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's been a while, so for the benefit of those who are not familiar, kind of share the story here.
Good. So the Josh Minton Foundation was started to honor my son Josh Minton, 2006 Elmwood grad, West Point grad, did a tour in Afghanistan, came back with back pain. Thought it was kidney stones, and it turned out to be a rare cancer. Josh fought for about 5.5 years before he passed away. But in that time, while he was going through treatment, he did a lot for like cancer causes, military causes, awareness fundraisers and stuff. So Josh bought about a 50-acre property down east of Cincinnati along the Ohio River that's got five bedrooms on a ridgetop in the middle of nowhere, wraparound porch, hot tub, fire pit, all that kind of stuff.
The perfect retreat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You hear so much about nature therapy for veterans, for cancer patients. So we had that property when he passed away, and we weren't sure what to do with it. And we decided we would start the Josh Minton Foundation. We provide free therapeutic stays of up to a week for anyone whose family or they've been impacted by cancer or military service. So it's just so touching. You know, a lot of Josh's memorabilia and things are there, and it's so touching. We get notes from people who have been there. We just had a stay last week, a little five-year-old boy that's cancer-free for a year. You know, they're looking for that 5 years to truly be cancer-free, but when you get that note from the family, you know, it's just so touching. And it's a way for us to keep Josh's memory alive.
And not only a tremendously rewarding way of honoring your son and his fight, but it's got to be tremendously rewarding to hear the stories, as you were saying, but also know that you are filling a need for those. I'm guessing that when you started this, you had no idea just how strongly it would resonate.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we started it hoping that maybe we'd get some traction.
Yeah.
You know, get people to come. And we get more each year.
What has that been like? You know, that realization of, you know, hearing from more and more families who, you know, are making use of that property, of that retreat.
Yeah. So it helps my heart, mm-hmm. you know, feel better.
Yeah.
It stinks every single day that Josh is gone.
Right.
But knowing that something that he had, you know, that he kind of created has allowed us to help others. I mean, it's just hard to really put into words, but seeing the growth and seeing the veterans come, and we do hunts for veterans and they come and I cook and hang out and hearing their stories and seeing guys get together with their buddies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it just gives you chills.
Yeah. Hit you right in the feels.
Yeah, exactly.
Now how do they reach out? How does, how do they, come to you, to go to the retreat?
Yeah, so we have a website, brothersonthree.org. Mm-hmm. It's got information about the foundation. It's got the application, just some basic information, to kind of get us started.
And they come from all over?
Yeah, you can be from anywhere.
And where have they come from? I mean, what is the furthest? I would imagine a lot from, kind of Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, that kind of area, right in the immediate area.
But. Yeah, there's a lot from Ohio, just from proximity. We know people who know people who know people.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, we've had people from Tennessee, New York.
As that word gets out.
Yeah, we had an application from Kansas.
Wow.
You know, they knew somebody. So it was really interesting. At Josh's funeral, there were guys from Alaska. Mm. You know, in the military. So it's really helped us kind of get that word out there.
That's another thing that you learn very quickly, especially in a situation like this, is that it is a large community. It's a very tight-knit community.
Both, very tight-knit.
You talk about the military and cancer survivors and, all of that.
Yeah, so. Both, exactly.
Yeah. And, Rob, I know you find that to be true as well, and sharing some of the history that you share, again, cycling back to the Facebook group, it's really amazing the stories and how so much of this kind of ties together.
And a lot of those veterans, and even still today, a lot of those people don't like to talk. Mm-hmm. But if they know that you truly honor and appreciate what mm-hmm. they've done, they'll tell you little tidbits that a lot of people really don't know. And it means they really honor and trust you. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a fantastic organization for Josh, and it's absolutely free if you're a veteran. I mean, people don't realize that.
Yeah.
But obviously, there is a big expense involved in just maintaining and running and the four-wheelers and everything involved in it down south.
Right.
So it is an Airbnb. So if you also are just looking for an escape and you're not military, you can pay for it, and that's what keeps the organization running, which is awesome.
Yeah. So it is listed on Airbnb?
Yeah, we have Airbnb guests all the time, but our goal is to raise enough money and get enough awareness out there mm-hmm. that we're full of therapeutic stays, and there's no room for the Airbnb.
Yeah, that's your priority.
But for now, it helps pay the bills.
Sure. So if somebody, you mentioned the website, if someone is obviously knows someone who could benefit from that, that's the place to go or to send that individual for more information.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to help, because you are a 501c3, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah. So how do folks help?
So on the website, there's also a place for donations. There's a place for volunteers. We should mention we have a Facebook page as well, mm-hmm. so you can kind of follow what's going on. But yeah, we're always looking for help. There's projects at the lodge. It's a 50-acre property in the middle of nowhere. There's always something that needs done.
Always something.
Yeah.
But what a tremendous mission. And again, a great way to honor your son and all of those who have served with distinction. And again, Rob, for those who want to learn more, I know you've shared a lot of information about the Josh Minton Foundation.
Yeah. I mean, you can go and join the Love Finley History site, and mm-hmm. you can learn and click on icons and pictures and stuff like that. You'll see beautiful stuff. But Josh for the people that knew him and appreciated him, he was truly not only a military hero, but he was a very good friend, and he absolutely loved history. He was affiliated with Hancock County. Even Bob sitting beside me and his wife, I mean, they were coaches for the soccer teams in Findlay, Ohio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the kind of organization we want to help out with. Mm-hmm. And it's not always about the old history. Sometimes it's creating some good history for these wonderful people.
Yeah. As we mentioned, entirely appropriate that as we approach Independence Day, we honor and remember those who have given us the freedom to celebrate this 4th of July. And obviously the dedication of the Minton family and the Josh Minton Foundation is tremendous. We've got a link on our webpage for more information as well, goodmornings.net. Rob Tong, Bob Minton, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, if you are fortunate enough to work somewhere that is completely free of conflict, then you can safely ignore what we're going to be talking about with our next guest. But for the other 99.999% of us, it may be the most valuable information you hear this week or this month or even this year. Richard Burke is Senior Vice President of JAMS Pathways, the world's leading provider of dispute resolution services. And obviously, Richard, I'm being a little facetious in that lead-in. I have never worked at a place where there has been no conflict, and I don't know anyone else who has either. But are we seeing more conflict in the workplace now than we used to?
Actually, no, we're not, Chris. The perception that there's a lot more conflict is just another outcome of social media. Statistics don't bear out that there's more conflict, but it feels like there is.
But maybe in previous generations, if we had a conflict, we'd quit and move on. And these days, it seems like people insist that something be done about it rather than just quitting and moving on. I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but I'm just wondering our sensibility has changed in that regard.
Well, certainly, we're a different society than 40 years ago. There would have been a lot of things that there was no recourse.
Yeah.
And now I think we're much more accustomed, both, you know, in the legal space, to know that, you know, when somebody steps out of line, there are actions that you can take, and those actions will be supported. So I do think it's the case that people are willing to tolerate less discrimination. And as you said, I think that is a good thing. I think that shows some social progress.
So we have all had those times when I'm thinking this time of year, the heat kind of gets to us and we snap at our kids, we snap at our spouse. Things kind of trigger us more quickly this time of year. Does that same thing happen in the workplace?
I think that it's very likely that there's a little bit of a spike in the summer months. Difficult to say why, but I think that there is a connection between the summer months and maybe a little bit of an uptick in conflict. And the idea, you know, I'm a parent, when the kids are home and you have to balance parenting and work and you don't have the ability to have at least school hours off,
right?
There's going to be some added stress.
And sometimes, as we know, that stress at home can carry over into the workplace. So kind of makes it a bit
absolutely.
It kind of makes it a bit more timely to talk about this at this particular point in time. So what are some strategies to help prevent conflict from boiling over in the first place?
The first thing to do is redirect toward the shared goal. Say, okay, what do we have on our plate today? And get people focused back on work. A second thing is to make sure that there are rules in place that are enforced even-handedly, quickly, and publicly. And these rules might address appropriate speech, behavior, and also dress, because pins and t-shirts and hats can certainly be speech.
Certainly, we don't want to say no small talk in the workplace. You can't talk about anything other than work at the office. That's not necessarily conducive to an environment where people want to work. So how do we know when it has become something that has to be addressed? And maybe we should talk about this from the individual point of view. What can I, you know, what should I know as an individual worker? And then what from a manager's perspective, when do we know when it's time to step in?
Sure. Well, there's going to be some obvious bright lines. I mean, there's some things that are just inappropriate, and I think we don't need to spend much time talking about those.
Sure.
Let's talk about like sort of the closer cases. And I think what I noticed is that people have felt less comfortable talking about anything with their coworkers. You know, and so if someone asked an innocuous question like, "What did you do over the weekend?" And the true answer is, "I attended a rally for a candidate, and I know you don't like that candidate," that's risky. And so a person can either suppress the info and just say nothing, or they can only talk about it with people that they know share their values, which can lead to cliquishness. Or you risk creating a conflict that can make work a little less comfortable. And so when someone has disagreed with you politically, even if it's been super polite, and then they need to offer maybe a little bit of constructive criticism on a work project, that interaction is fraught with tension.
Yeah.
And without being able to sort of measure it, you can feel it in the workplace.
As we mentioned, there are always going to be those times when you're going to have conflict. I mean, it's any interaction between human beings, there are going to be those moments. And while we talk about the importance of making it clear what is and isn't appropriate to talk about in the workplace, that doesn't necessarily mean, or does it, that the first time any conflict arises, then we go to HR, we go to a manager, we go to the boss and say, "Hey, this is making me uncomfortable." I guess I'm wondering, are there conflict resolution strategies? Are there ways of navigating an active conflict without taking it to that next, or before taking it to that next step?
Well, so let me make a real careful distinction here. Most workplaces will have a set of behaviors that require mandatory reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be clear that, you know, if the workplace has a situation like that, you know, if there's a situation where somebody's been abused in some way, or
sure,
some kind of illegal discrimination is going on,
right,
then that has to be reported, and nobody should feel responsible for
right,
taking that on themselves.
Right.
But there are, as you say, there's a huge gray area of uncomfortable situations that don't rise to that trigger level. And some things that I would suggest to people are, first, realize not all conflict is bad. In fact, some is productive. And the way I think about this is to divide things in the world of task conflict, which is you think the right way to go is to paint from left to right, and I think the right way to go is to paint from right to left. And maybe we have a disagreement about how to get a job done, and that's productive. Relationship conflict, you know, when you criticize the way that I'm painting and I start to feel like that's personal, that becomes unproductive. And so I think one of the first things that workers need to do is to separate task conflict from relationship conflict and make sure that when we're having conflict, it's about making the job work better. So that's the first thing, separate the people from the problem.
Yeah.
A second important thing is don't react right away. It's often the case that people who say something kind of themselves realize, maybe I said that insensitively, maybe that wasn't what I meant. And mm-hmm. So taking a moment at least before reacting is important. A third tip, replace judgment with curiosity. And just ask people, say, you know, that comment struck me funny. Can you tell me a little bit more? Maybe I don't understand.
Mm.
So don't assume that somebody is trying to say something mean. Maybe it was insensitive. Maybe they, you know, just need to learn a new term or a way to think about something. So that's important. And I would say, finally, leadership needs to know when they're in over their head. Don't think that it's a sign of failure to call in an expert. It's actually a sign of wisdom and courage.
Again, Richard Burke is Senior Vice President of JAMS Pathways, the world's leading private provider of dispute resolution services. And you have more resources on this topic on your website, too, right?
We sure do. We've been in the business for not quite 50 years, and we handle about 20,000 conflicts a year. So we have quite a few resources in our arsenal, and we'll make them available to anybody who asks.
Richard, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the day.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A driving tip for you this morning. If you are operating a motor vehicle without a valid license, first of all, you should never do that. But if you do, if you find you are driving a motor vehicle without a valid license, you should be especially careful to obey all traffic laws. Definitely, you do not want to drive with $2 million worth of drugs in the car. Just a little traffic tip for you. If you're going to be driving without a valid license, don't be carrying $2 million worth of drugs in your car. The California Highway Patrol recently pulled a car over for a routine traffic violation, wound up impounding the vehicle after discovering that the driver did not have a valid license. Before impounding the car, however, a canine made an even bigger discovery. 262 pounds of crystal meth, 5 pounds of fentanyl, and 2 pounds of heroin in the passenger compartment. As according to local news reports, they also found suitcases and backpacks with even more drugs stashed in the trunk. The drugs have a street value of $2.7 million. The driver, I'm not sure exactly where in California this was. I believe San Francisco area. Yeah. The drugs have a street value of over $2.7 million. The driver, Isaac Abraham Sandoval Lopez of Portland, Oregon, has been arrested and faces various drug charges, it says here. Plus, a charge of driving without a valid license. Just throw that in for good measure. Oops. Let's see. Here's another driving tip for you. Be aware that golf carts do not make good getaway vehicles. Zachary David Muller, age 27, from Indian River County, Florida, tried to sell a stolen golf cart on social media. Here's another case. Social media undoing a would-be criminal. Tried to sell a stolen golf cart on social media. He arranged a meeting with someone he thought was a potential buyer, turned out to be an undercover cop. Of course it did. They were tipped off that the golf cart was stolen, and so the buyer shows up, turns out it's an undercover cop. Once he discovered that he had been busted, he tried to jump in the golf cart and speed away. Only to learn that golf carts don't make the best getaway cars. After trying to escape in the stolen golf cart, he was captured by a canine unit. You want to pick a getaway car that can outrun the canine. Police arrested Mr. Muller, who was already wanted for crimes in 3 other Florida counties. As it turns out, so. Oh, my. Where would we be without the dumb criminals? Although sometimes the criminals just make it too easy for law enforcement. You know, that's from the International File, a story of a Chinese woman named Quinn, Q-I-N, Quinn, Chinese woman, learned that she had been using a grenade as a hammer for the past 20 years. Miraculously, never exploded. Qin says she found the strange metal lump 20 years ago on her farm and has used it as a tool ever since. She said, I've been using it at home to pound red pepper, crack nuts, hammer in nails. Had no idea that it was an unexploded grenade until a team of men who came to work on her house recognized the object as something potentially dangerous. They alerted authorities, who were able to safely dispose of the ordnance. That's crazy. You've been using it as a hammer for 20 years. That could have ended very differently, that story. Wow. New York can be a rough city sometimes. It can be a tough town. NYPD investigating the decapitation of a statue of Jesus early in the morning this past Sunday in Queens. That's a tough neighborhood. Decapitated a statue of Jesus. Police say it happened at the Holy Family Roman Catholic Church around 5:30 a.m. The incident captured on surveillance video, and the NYPD Hate Crime Task Force has been alerted. A suspect shown in the video exiting an SUV, striking the statue several times with some object. Cops say accompanying statues of Mary and Joseph were also assaulted, but not significantly damaged. No arrests have yet been made. That's a tough town. Decapitating a statue of Jesus. Wow. Somebody's in big trouble, not just with the law on earth, but, you know, it could be in real big trouble in the afterlife. You know what I mean? That's a rough neighborhood. Landlord in Minnesota arrested after allegedly throwing a live tarantula at a tenant. I've heard of landlord-tenant disputes, but this is not the way you settle those things. The incident occurred last Thursday when Jackie Vasquez allegedly refused to leave the property owned by Marissa Simonetti. Ms. Simonetti rented her property to Vasquez, but she says her tenant was in the house less than 2 weeks before she started sending double and triple paragraph long texts and yelling at people on the phone in some sort of dispute over something involving the home. Don't know exactly, it's unclear exactly what triggered the dispute, but Ms. Simonetti, the landlady, then purchased a tarantula at a pet store, and Ms. Vasquez says she threw the spider at her. Now, for her part, Ms. Simonetti maintained that she just tipped it down the stairs. I'm not sure that that makes it any better, though. She says that she was inspired in part by the movie Home Alone. Tried to pull a Kevin. She said she was scared, and she didn't know what to do, so that's why she got the spider. She has been charged with misdemeanor domestic assault on her tenant. By the way, just to make this story even better, Ms. Simonetti, the landlord, she is running for a seat on the county board. She's a candidate for public office. Sure, this is not going to help her campaign at all. Throwing a tarantula at your tenant. That's not a way to solve a dispute. And finally, in the broken news this morning, and here is a story with a happy ending. I love this. A man in Tennessee purchased a $20 lottery ticket from a gas station in Kentucky on June 8th. Happened to be in Kentucky. And so while he was there, going to buy a lottery ticket. He vowed, made this promise, if I hit for $1 million, I'm never eating bologna again. To his shock, he scratched it off, and sure enough, he was a $1 million winner. Chose to take his winnings in a lump sum of $700,000. Aside from never eating bologna again, his other plans, to pay off his house, pay off his cars, and be bill-free within the next week, so he'll never have to never have to eat bologna again. That's awesome. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Protests across college campuses from New York to California and everywhere in between. The branches of the military having a hard time filling the ranks with new members and a continually divisive election cycle. This 4th of July, Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso will shed light on the politics of patriotism and why there are reasons to still be proud to be an American.
4th of July morning at 11, 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. I saw this survey and it really jumped out at me. It kind of resonated with me because my niece just had her first child just last month, just the past couple of weeks. And obviously, so it's really cool to when you know our extended family is now even more extended. And when there is somebody in the family or a friend who is with child, it is certainly not unusual when people find out you're having a baby, they are more than willing to offer up often unsolicited advice. Did you experience that when you had kids? Have you done that to others when they are having kids? Well, it's a new survey commissioned by Mint, the financial planning platform, Mint. A new survey asked parents and expecting parents, what was the most helpful advice you were given when you had your child, when you started a family? And the best advice, the most helpful advice, according to parents themselves, 33% of those in the survey said it was to sleep while the baby sleeps. That is the best piece of advice, and you hear that all the time. Sleep when the baby sleeps. It can be very tempting to use that time when the baby is down to get all of the other things done that you need to do. But if you do that, you're never going to get any rest. So sleep when the baby sleeps. 30% says make sure to take time to take care of yourself was the best advice that they got. Another good, more good advice. Other top pieces of advice in the survey, 28% said trust your parenting instincts. What is it? Just trust your instincts. Because every, especially first-time parents, they wonder, am I going to be able to do this right? Just trust your instincts. 28% said that was the best advice they got. That was tied for don't feel guilty about not being perfect, which kind of goes under that same heading. Because you always worry about that. Am I going to do the wrong thing? 28% said the best advice they got was don't feel guilty about not being perfect. 27% said the best advice they got when they became a parent, don't compare yourself to other parents. 22% said you don't have to take care of everything by yourself was the best piece of advice they got. Another 22% said recommendations to take as many photos and videos as you can of your newborn was great advice. And of course, these days, that is not an issue. It seems everybody with their smartphones just can't get enough of taking photos and videos of their little one. But that's good, because one day, sometime in the future, you will be glad you did that. 21% appreciated the advice to be as present as you can as a parent. And that's great advice, not just for an infant, for a newborn, but throughout your child's life. Be as present as you can. And when it comes to getting ready for baby number one, the survey finds the average parent spent 3 weeks getting their nursery ready for their baby. 17% admitted they started decorating the nursery as soon as they found out they were going to have a baby. As soon as they found out they were pregnant. Time to start getting the nursery ready. But, and I thought this was kind of interesting, and again, you can see if this mirrors your own experience. No matter how much new parents will pre-plan, things don't necessarily always go according to plan. The average parent then spent 6.5 hours changing the nursery after the baby was born. Time to get an update on what's happening at the Findlay YMCA as we head into the main part of the summer. We're joined by Sierra Hutton, Derek Draper from the Findlay Y. A lot of things going on. It is a busy place. The Why, you just launched the Why on the Fly events for kids. This will be going on, like, what, throughout the summer here?
Yes. So we've had the Why on the Fly now for a few years. That was a big project, in part thanks to Hancock leadership a few years ago. But through that, we have a wonderful intern who's working on that project, and she has taken it to all of the local little towns and villages around us.
Yeah.
So I'm a Vanloo girl, so she's been trying to get out to us as well. So it's very exciting because we're actually able to create our reach a little bit farther now.
Yeah.
Get out there.
And that's kind of the idea, to take the Y programs, things that, especially for kids, can get them active and go out there into the communities.
Yep. So she's going to local parks. I know, I believe it's Rawson, Arcadia. She has things already set up with their parks where she's going out in the evenings and free activity. You just come and enjoy the fun that she has planned.
Yeah, and you know, it's great because not everybody can come to the Y, so take and the Y to the kids.
Exactly. So this also gives kids something to do through the summer. It keeps them healthy, active, but they may not have the rides to get into the Y to come to our building or just even the means. So this is just a way to make sure that everyone's getting a part of the Y.
And there are different days throughout the summer where this would be happening in the various parks.
Yeah, so just keep an eye on our Facebook page and our website, FinleyYMCA.org. We keep our calendar updated so that way everyone knows what's going on and where we'll be.
Speaking of things for kids, the Youth Triathlon is right around the corner.
Right around the corner. Yep. It's the same weekend as Balloon Fest.
Okay.
We've always kind of partnered with them. It's a nice partnership. It'll be on Saturday, August 10th, and very exciting this year. We have a new all abilities category, so that way anyone, no matter your ability, you can get out there and you can be part of the Y Tri this year.
So the youth triathlon folks need to sign up for that, right?
Yes, just go to our website and you can sign up. And we also have an open door scholarship as well. So if you may not have the financial means for the registration, we have other options. So just reach out to us.
And you don't have to be a member of the YMCA.
Correct. Yeah, it can be anyone. It's open to anyone and everyone.
Same thing again with the Y on the Fly. That's
correct.
Open to everyone.
Yep.
And you don't have to register for that. It's just
correct.
Show
that
up.
One you just show up.
Just
to.
Show up.
Yep. Just come have fun with us.
Just come have fun. And also, when we're talking about things for the kids, we got stuff for the grown-ups, the Battle of the Businesses coming up in August as well.
So Battle of the Businesses, this is the second one we've had. So last year was awesome. So this year it's on Friday, August 16th out at Riverside.
Okay.
And we have quite a few signups already. So we have cornhole out there, a boat race, volleyball, soccer, trivia. There's going to be food trucks. There's a DJ playing for it. So a really big event. And it's a really good time. So definitely encourage people to sign up for that.
And again, more information on the website.
Absolutely.
Like we said before, don't have to be a member of the Y.
Nope. Nope. Anybody's available to do it. Yep.
Okay. And the other big thing that is going on right now, you have launched into the annual campaign.
Yes.
Tell us more about this.
So our annual campaign is really special here at the Y because, you know, we obviously are a membership-based organization. But outside of that, we realize that everyone should have an opportunity to be a member of a Y. So the Open Door Scholarships is what we raise funds for through the annual campaign. It's very important as people go through hardships, financial barriers, things like that. Every dollar that comes in annually through our annual campaign goes back into those scholarships. So we can ensure that when you come to the Y, we want to do our best to make it work that you can become a member with us.
And how do folks support the campaign?
Yeah, so you can obviously come in and see us. We always like to see people. Outside of that, you can just go to our website or Facebook page, anything like that. There's going to be options to donate there, and no donation is too small. So you have a penny to give, we'll take it. You have $100 to give, we'll take it. We're just very happy for the support and grateful.
And of course, as we know, a lot of exciting things going on at the Y with plans for expansion and growth and new facilities and all of that. So.
Oh yeah, it's exciting, and we're into it, and just seeing the renderings of what the facility could look like in the future is awesome. And I know the community's getting excited, and our members are getting excited. So still a long way to go on that, but you know, we're working towards that, and we're really excited to bring this nice facility to the community of Findlay.
So if someone wants to help with the campaign, this is going on. What is the time frame for the campaign?
Yeah, so we still have quite quite a bit of time here, but the exciting news is we're actually, so we've broken our campaign up into two phases, the capital campaign. Phase one is our new Findlay YMCA Early Learning Center. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be, so if people are familiar right now with the Mary Brenner Child Development Center, this is going to be an upgraded facility. Our current building was not made to be a child care facility, so it's time for a little update. Mm-hmm. And we're getting very excited to break ground here in the next few weeks for that. And that'll be about a 12 to 18 month project. So hopefully about 2 years, you'll see phase one done, and then we will roll right into phase two, which will be our new downtown branch and then renovations to our east branch as well.
By the way, speaking of child care and so on, preschool previews going on through the month of July. So if folks want to learn more about, you know, that end of things, this is a good opportunity.
This is the time to do it. Yeah, we have an incredible preschool program, a little bit of a hidden gem, I think. And it's a place where you get so many activities. Plus, if you come and you do the preview week for us, it's $100. You can bring your kids 5 days a week, plus they're going to get to go swimming in our pool. So that's a big perk of it, right?
Yeah,
and that's a neat thing about our child development centers is our kids learn to swim while they're in our programs. So if you come do our preschool preview, which we have plenty of spots open still, come hang out with us for a week. We'll get to preview preschool and go swimming.
Very cool. And we talk about all of these special things that are going on. We talk about the capital campaign and you know, really, there are always lots of programs on the schedule. It's a full schedule, things that anybody can join in and sign up for that are ongoing. And there, you can always join the Y. I mean, we talk about this around the first of the year, especially, which is the big time.
Right.
But it's not mandatory that you join at the beginning of the year.
No. Any time is a perfect time, as I always say. I mean, we have so many things going on, and our programs change. We add new things just to try to get everybody involved, whether they want to, you know, be really intense about their training or they want to do it nice and slow. So we change it. And I would encourage people to, if they're even thinking about joining the Y, to just come in and check it out, get a tour, get some information, and we can help them out and try to get them in their fitness journey or even their mental health journey, which is just as important as being physically fit as well.
Kind of ties in.
Yeah.
And the website has more information on all of these programs.
Anything you need, just visit FindlayYMCA.org.
Very good. Sierra Hutton and Derek Draper from the Findlay YMCA with us this morning. An update on what's happening as we get into the heart of the summer here. Guys, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And with that, we will wrap up another edition of the podcast this morning. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. You can sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to email us directly if there's something you want to share. Again, goodmornings.net is your one-stop shop. Be sure to visit us in our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow to finish up our holiday shortened week.